Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
This podcast may contain adult themes, strong language, and stupid health advice. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to In Bad Taste, where we cast a critical eye over health documentaries and the claims they make. Don't worry, we're not high today. I'm your host, registered nutritionist Pixie Turner.
And I'm cardiothoracic surgeon Dr. Nikki Stamp. This week we will continue our journey through the new Netflix documentary series, Unwell, watching each episode and dissecting some of the absolutely insane wellness practices that they cover. And this week we're taking a trip into, well, we're tripping for mental health, apparently.
We are. And yeah, sadly, we are not high for this, which means we had to suffer through the entire thing. This episode is called Ayahuasca. Ayahuasca, which talks about a specific brew of leaves that has been used for years by First Nations people from places like Peru. Psychedelics in general are gaining popularity. It is something I've seen a lot of. This interest in psychedelics like mushrooms for mental health, to treat serious mental illness, or just to live and work every day a bit better than you currently are. But is it all it's cracked up to be? Cracked. Nice.
Oh, God. So many double entendres. Look, psychedelics are just another thing that I think has been massively touted as a cure-all. But, you know, let's be honest, it's not completely straightforward. It's not completely proven. So let's get stuck into this episode. And why don't we start with saying, what is ayahuasca? So ayahuasca, I'd never heard of it before.
Same.
Never heard of it before in my life. Like, I've heard of psychedelics. I know about acid and LSD and magic mushrooms and, you know, all those kinds of like pretty commonplace things. But ayahuasca is really interesting because it has a lot of religious significance in South America. But ayahuasca is a South American brew made from two different plants, the vine of one plant and the leaves of another plant. But the composition isn't always consistent because you can substitute different plants in certain circumstances. But there's two major components to ayahuasca. The first one is called DMT or dimethyltryptamine, which has psychedelic properties. And it also contains a monoamine oxidase inhibitor, which we actually use and sometimes still do use, not commonly, for antidepressants because they basically increase levels of serotonin in the brain. Serotonin is a hormone, a chemical messenger that makes you feel good.
Yeah, it's basically the precursor to SSRIs like Prozac.
Correct. Yes, exactly. So SSRIs came along. They're safer and probably more effective than monoamine oxidase inhibitors. But ayahuasca contains both of those compounds and it's drunk as a tea, which, oh my God, looked revolting. It looks like tar mixed with feces, I think would be an accurate description.
And a bit of spirulina thrown in for good measure. Right. It looked really revolting.
Yeah, it looks so gross. So that's what ayahuasca is. It's a psychedelic. Now, interestingly, I thought this was really fascinating, is that they're obviously going to talk about how just random Joe blogs off the street is using this to make themselves feel better or treat their depression and so on and so forth. But that's not actually how ayahuasca is supposed to be used. It's not how it originated. And it actually started in a much more traditional fashion.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because we are introduced to this by someone in Peru saying, the Western world is fucked. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's kind of accurate. The entire world is actually pretty fucked. Everything is fucked. We're all fucked. And what happens is that because a lot of white people decide they need to find themselves, they go to places like Peru and are trying to self-actualize. And as a result, it is really good business. And I think that's important to point out because let's not forget that the wellness industry in general is big business.
Massive.
Yeah, massive, massive trillions of dollars. So traditionally what happens is that it's the shaman who actually drinks the ayahuasca, not the patient. It is not actually medicine for the patient. What happens is that the shaman drinks this as a way to bring them closer to this kind of spiritual realm. And as a result, they then chant, and it's these chants and these incantations that are in front of the patient and to the patient that ends up actually being what is seen as the medicine and what is actually curative. It is not the case that the patient drinks the ayahuasca. However, when the tourists come along, the tourists are drinking it for $2,000 a piece because tourists love drugs. They are going and drinking this shit.
Yeah, exactly. Look, which is really brings up the fact that tourists, and particularly white tourists, love going and screwing up local infrastructure and local systems and local religion. And, you know, it made me really sad that it looked like just Westerners are taking over. But of course, like most Westerners, people who have gone and had ayahuasca then take it back to places like the United States. Why do you keep disappointing us, United States? And
infinite capacity to disappoint.
And, you know, they take it back to churches. They call them churches where people drink it regularly. And it's completely removed from its origins in this very religious, very traditional sense.
Oh, let's be clear, by the way, that they are doing this in a quote-unquote church because they found a loophole. Because ayahuasca is an illegal substance in the US, so they tried to find a legal loophole by claiming they're a church and that ayahuasca is part of their spiritual practice, and that would therefore make them exempt from this. Now, they actually filed for this and haven't received a reply, so they decided instead of being cautious and waiting until they got that exemption, they're just gonna keep doing it anyway, which... I guess, does that make it technically illegal?
Not only are they continuing to do it, they're talking about the fact that they're continuing to do it outside of the law on a documentary. Like, really, not too sharp, are we?
Clearly not. Clearly not.
Do you know one of the really interesting things that I sort of picked up on when they were talking about this to begin with is that someone who's a big proponent of ayahuasca, you know, when people feel like there was a lady, it was in South America, a lady who cooks the leaves and prepares the leaves and sells like tons of them to people, including Westerners, tourists in the region, that she says, I feel like I've played a really positive part in these changes. And I was like, you know what? In wellness, everyone is very quick to claim that something went right and something went well. But notice how nobody ever says, geez, I really feel like I've played a part in the negative outcome, like someone dying or someone getting cancer or dying from their cancer or someone getting an eating disorder. No one ever takes responsibility for that part of it now, do they?
You are so right. My God, you are so correct on this. How fucked up is that? Are we surprised though? I am not, to be honest. I am really, really not. So we go through, as usual with these kinds of documentaries, we talk to a whole bunch of people, and these are all people who are in the US having this experience at this not so technically maybe legal church. And it tries to ask the question of, could ayahuasca actually be helpful? And they try and answer this by presenting us one person who was an alcoholic, one person who was a heroin addict, and one who was, I believe, a veteran who had been charged with murder at some point. Yeah. So my immediate concern was that they're substituting one addiction or coping mechanism for another in a not so healthy way.
Yes, absolutely. I guess it's probably just a quick segue into hallucinogens or psychedelic drugs and whether or not they are, you know, are useful at treating mental illness. So I suppose just to have a quick overview, there are lots of different types of psychedelic medication or psychedelic drugs. So probably one that people are most familiar with would be LSD. You know, it was really popular in the 60s and 70s. It had a really, really bad name, unsurprisingly, because people were having like bad trips and all kinds of, you know, really nasty, nasty effects. So that's LSD. It's very, very highly regulated. A lot of research was going into the utility of LSD in a psychiatric field at the time, but because it became illegal, it was probably did have some political undertones. You know, we know that that is the case with a lot of illicit substances. There's a lot of pressure from societal or political outfits, but anyway, LSD is not necessarily a particularly friendly drug for everybody. So there was that one. There's psilocybin, which is magic mushrooms or shrooms, which is another one that's been fairly well researched in terms of psychiatric conditions. And of course, there is MDMA, which is ecstasy, another one that's got good research. Ayahuasca is probably the least researched psychedelic for its mental health benefits. But if we're looking broadly at the use of psychedelics in mental illness, it's been looked at for, you know, mood disorders like depression, been looked at for addiction, smoking cessation, anxiety, pain, all these kinds of things. The general feeling is that it has potential. That is the general feeling. However, there are potentials for abuse of these drugs. So people using them in a dangerous or unsafe fashion or regularly, that it needs to be done in a monitored setting. Now, monitored setting is not a pseudoscience church, and church in inverted commas. Mm-hmm. It's monitored by a psychiatrist because there are dangerous side effects. And of course, we also need to understand that there are people who should never in a million years be anywhere near these medications. So that can include people who are on other kinds of psychiatric medications or who have other underlying medical conditions. But look, you know, all in all, the research is still sort of in its early days. The benefits are certainly promising. The risks are unknown. And I think that's really important to state.
Absolutely. And they talk to a neuroscientist who makes some really good points, but he mm-hmm. does also sound a little bit too much like Deepak Chopra places to me. There's a bit of a word salad going on there.
He's had ayahuasca. He's 100% drunk it.
I am pretty sure you're right there for sure. Now, he's doing some interesting studies on treatment-resistant depression, which I thought was really interesting for them to include. And in theory, I think that sounds pretty great because, you know, medication isn't always going to be the answer for everybody. I mean, ideally, I'm very strongly believe that we ideally need therapy to be accessible and available to everyone, completely free of stigma.
Yep, agree.
But I also acknowledge that therapy is out of reach for many because of stigma or because it's just, it can be expensive. And so that's not going to be a realistic goal for everybody either. And mm-hmm. so I think these kinds of studies, whether it's on ayahuasca or on LSD, ketamine, MD, whatever it is, I think it's kind of exciting. So far, from what this neuroscientist said, the beneficial effects that may come from ayahuasca last for 7 days. Mm-hmm. I'm going to need something a bit more long-term before I am sold on this idea. I'm going to need something a bit more long-term than 7 days, but I think the potential, I do think it's quite exciting, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I agree. But I think, you know, it's not... You know, I wouldn't be putting all my eggs in this basket either. That is for sure. And again, I certainly wouldn't be doing it in an unsupervised, unsafe fashion.
Yeah.
And we do hear from a psychiatrist who has a lot of research in this area who said that psychedelics can be good, but they're not for everyone. And he's seen, you know, over 100 cases of serious negative outcomes, and we're not talking about like a bit of an itch or, you know, something small, you know, people with psychosis, people with something called serotonin syndrome, particularly if they're on another antidepressant like an SSRI, so it's things like Prozac. Serotonin syndrome is pretty dangerous when you basically get an overload of serotonin. It can be fatal if it's untreated. You can get unbelievably high blood pressure. You can induce psychosis in someone who has had either previous psychotic tendencies or someone who maybe has an underlying predisposition that they didn't know about. These are not small things. This is, again, I think we're that is really the crux of psychedelics for this. They're interesting, but we don't know enough yet. And yeah, you're not going to go through all of this for 7 days.
The people who are doing this kind of thing are often quite desperate.
Yeah.
I really understand that. We talked to this one woman, Angela Murray, who says that if everything else has failed, what do you have to lose? And she's right. I mean, I totally get that. And her story is really awful. Her husband killed her daughter and then himself, and she sank into depression. And then eventually she found people talking about this drug on a veteran support group. And she says that she tried it once. She's not cured. She still has depression, so she's going back for more.
Yeah.
We also talked to Miyoke, who has taken this drug 65 fucking times, which is a lot.
Yeah.
And she's also quite interesting because she had... Oh God, what was it?
She has something called scleroderma. So scleroderma is an autoimmune condition where people get basically kind of like scarring or fibrosis of a lot of organs, their skin, blood vessels, lungs. I've transplanted people with scleroderma. They get problems with the esophagus. It's a really potentially very debilitating, very dangerous condition. It tends to affect women. And she was pretty well, she's kind of like not bedbound, but she was like, you know, wheelchair bound, wasn't she?
She was. She said she was bedridden the first time that she tried this. And so she thought she had nothing to lose. And then she said you could walk while the effects of the drug were still strong. And then she couldn't again. And over repeated doses, she regained her ability to move. Interestingly, she also says, though, that she was sexually abused when she was younger.
Right.
And she feels that the drug helped her to process the trauma, thereby healing her body. Now, this is really interesting. I do have a very special and strong interest in trauma. And I mean, there is a lot about trauma and PTSD, for example, that doesn't always make sense. I mean, we have this treatment called EMDR, which literally just involves moving your eyes from side to side. And that actually can really help process trauma really quickly.
Yeah.
Brains are weird. There is a lot that doesn't make sense. And there is a link between trauma and bodily responses, because it is true that emotions are stored in the body in a certain way. I mean, for example, there is a fascinating statistic that children who have experienced trauma are 50 times more likely to be diagnosed with asthma. So this I found actually a really interesting story, because there is a connection between these things. I would obviously not go so far as to say that this drug is a cure for these things, or that it should be recommended at this point, especially because the downsides and the risks are really, really intense.
Yeah.
And we see this quite clearly when we get to watch people going through this process of eating or drinking this drug.
So, yeah, so we wind up back at SoulQuest Ayahuasca Church. So just to, I suppose, come back and give you a bit of background on this, this place claims to have treated 9,000 people. And I don't know why they say treated, right? They're not a goddamn hospital. I'm so sick of them, like, misappropriating that term. Anyway, 9,000 people since 2015, and it's a church based on South American religious traditions. And I was like, yeah, but it's run by a white dude. They apparently do have some people from Brazil and Peru there, so, you know, they haven't completely stolen a culture, just a little bit. So this is a place that are kind of breaking the law. But we see a ceremony, but I think we need to give some background about this ceremony, because they had someone die at their church during an ayahuasca ceremony. And what they say is that someone had a seizure and they died, a young man. And the coroner's report said that it was caused by hyponatremia, which is a really, really, really low level of sodium in the blood, which can very seriously impact the brain, which they said was from drinking too much water. Which could be doing, because one of the first things that happens when you drink ayahuasca is that you hurl your guts up, something cruel. The thing that was most concerning for me about this is that the investigation showed that the church members, why are they calling themselves a church too? So the people there tried to help for 3 hours with a seizing person before calling an ambulance. Here, just going to intervene with a little public service announcement. If you or someone else has used drugs and something bad happens, call an ambulance. They will not arrest you. They are just there to treat the person who needs the help, okay?
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Now, this is not an isolated case of someone who has died using ayahuasca, and you know, sadly, they there's a whole bunch of like news reports if you Google it. But anyway, this one particularly, they said that the coroner said that the foreign substances and chemicals involved in the soul cleansing weekend cannot be ruled in or out as causative or contributory to death. That doesn't mean that they've been given a free pass, that they didn't contribute to it. That just means that we can't necessarily prove that was, that he died from the ayahuasca. However, say it was pretty safe to say had he not had ayahuasca, he probably wouldn't have died. Mm-hmm. And this is when I got like really annoyed. The church guy says, oh, that was such a painful time for me and my team. Oh, I'm so sorry. What about the family of the guy who died? I mean, the arrogance of these people is just astounding. But
yeah,
one good thing that came of it, and I think this is just the bare minimum, that as a result of that person dying, they hired a paramedic and an EMT to pre-screen people to make sure that they didn't have any medical conditions, they weren't taking any medications, they would check their blood pressure and so on and so forth to make sure that there was no reasons why they shouldn't be, participating in the ayahuasca. So that's the background, and then we get to see an ayahuasca ceremony, including the lady who had, including some of the people that we met first, in the first sort of 10, 15 minutes of the film, and including the lady whose husband really sadly shot himself and their daughter.
Yeah, and the people have a really interesting response to this idea of throwing up that much. They feel like they're purging harmful aspects of themselves and their lives. And you know what? Symbolically, it kind of makes sense in a way. It's partly why, detoxes are seen as being like a really, it has the same kind of narrative of this kind of detoxing thing that we obviously see in less extreme ways, is that it's a way of cleansing yourself and getting rid of those nasty bits in your body. And in this case, it's quite symbolic in a in a psychological way as well. But following that, people have they have this period where they throw up, and then they get this period where they start to see things. That's where the visual part of the brain is really lit up, and there's a lot going on. People see memories, people see symbols of all sorts of strange things. People have a mad trip, basically. But we also see a woman having a bad reaction on camera, and it's really scary to watch. They're saying, has she stopped breathing? Make sure she's still breathing.
She stopped breathing.
And then they say literally on camera, what do you want to do? I'm like, is that a fucking question?
You call an ambulance.
Oh my God, call an ambulance. And the next morning we interview her and she says she feels like it was a bit of a waste.
Yeah.
And she's terrified at the idea of trying it again.
Yeah, duh. And she has thousands of dollars in hospital bills.
Yes, exactly. Really problematic.
Yeah.
Now, one thing that I did like is that they have a therapy session the next morning to debrief. And I think that is so important. And I can't imagine how much that helps.
Yeah.
You see people getting really emotional, being very open, very vulnerable, crying, talking about their experiences. And that is so important.
Yeah.
It is so important for them to have that. I don't condone the entire experience, but that part of it, I think, is such an important move to allow people to process and debrief about what's happening.
Absolutely. Well, I guess, you know, one of the things we've kind of alluded to already is that this practice has ayahuasca specifically. Other psychedelics have lots of other different roots. You know, sometimes people just want to get high. But, you know, ayahuasca has really strong religious relevance to
spiritual.
Spiritual, I think, yeah. Spiritual is probably a better word. You're right. Spiritual significance to people in South America. And we do take a trip back to Peru for like this horrific story, which is told by a journalist who leads into this by saying that the practice of ayahuasca has really lost its sort of traditional sense now, that there's a whole bunch of people, tourists, who are using this and they're not having the necessary preparations that the shaman would have had, you know, when it was done traditionally. And they tell the story of a local woman by the name of Olivia who was murdered, who was shot on the doorstep of her home. And she was a very important figure in that community. And she was apparently shot by a Canadian man who had a bad reaction to ayahuasca, and it's revealed that he probably was taking other medications for depression at the same time.
Antipsychotic.
Antipsychotics, correct. And anyway, he had a bad reaction. He killed her. And then as a result of that, he was lynched on video by locals as revenge. I was like, what a terrible story. Nothing good came of that story. You have someone, important local figure murdered. You have a young guy who was, you know, tripping around the world, who killed someone and then was murdered himself on video. And then you have four local people who were apparently prosecuted for strangling him. Like, what is, this is so bad. This is what happens when you kind of disrupt, I don't want to say the natural order, but, you know, when you go in and culturally appropriate things like this that we don't know anything about. Like, it was absolutely awful, this part of the story.
Yeah, and I think cultural appropriation is the right term for this. Mm-hmm. They say how, quote, whenever Westerners get to a place, we take over, we take it for us and transform it.
Yep.
And I think, you know, that is unfortunately really accurate.
Yeah.
And actually beyond this also happens a lot in the wellness industry. Now, this is something that I have written about, in the sense that the wellness industry likes to take a lot of various foods and practices from other cultures and separates them entirely from the traditions from where they came.
Yeah.
And makes it purely into a health thing. So for example, maca being something that apparently, again, in ancient Peru was consumed. We don't have a lot of research for this, and it's taken then to the UK or to other, you know, other various cultures, like places like the UK, like the US, mm-hmm. where there are a lot of white people, let's be honest, and it's taken out of that original context completely.
Mm.
We've done it with, you know, with sage burning and things like that. It's taken away completely, especially also with things like
yoga.
Yoga, great example. Mm. Most yoga teachers now are white, and a lot of them don't have a lot of understanding around the origins and the practices where yoga has come from, or what it actually means in that sense. And, you know, things like matcha. Matcha is a great example of this. Now, matcha is part of a kind of a ceremony.
Mm.
In places like Japan. And when we've taken it to places like the UK, and it's, you know, matcha latte, matcha donuts, it's just made into a health fad.
Yeah.
And there's no mention of the original practice, where it's come from, whatsoever. It's a kind of cultural appropriation. I see it as a kind of food colonization, basically.
Isn't that with quinoa as well? Like, quinoa, you know, it's become so popular as a superfood and a health food, that and it comes from a very specific, you know, area, very specific region, so much so that it's become so popular that the viability of the crops are at risk.
Yeah, see, that's concerning, isn't it? That's really concerning.
Right. But as long as we get our superfood.
Yeah, right, exactly. Like, we see a local healer says that Westerners want to take everything from them, including their spirituality. And you know what? He is not wrong.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that was really uncomfortable. I think that people doing this, should really take a long, hard look at themselves and think about life outside of their own little sphere. And I'm not saying the people who are doing it because they're desperate for treatment for, you know, like we said, there's some people who have some really, you know, dreadful life events that have happened to them and they get some relief from it. From the people, I think I mentioned earlier on this, you know, so-called church in the United States, you know, it was run by a white dude. You know, what does he know about South American spirituality? It just, it was sort of everything that's kind of wrong with the Western world. And, you know, just, it made me incredibly uncomfortable. And I think that's a good thing because I think we should reflect on the kind of the damage that we do in the world in the pursuit of, you know, wellness, so-called wellness.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when people are, you know, completely taking this out of context. I get the desperation. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to argue with that necessarily because I think that is difficult, that is complex. But when you see these people who want to, quote, find themselves going to Peru and really, you know, paying $2,000 to take this drug and then, you know, shit happens like having a bad trip and accidentally murdering a healer, like, no, at that point, we need to seriously consider what the fuck are we doing here?
Yeah. Oof. Yeah, I agree. So here's a question for you. Did this film make you more or less likely to be curious about this kind of treatment?
So at the beginning, more curious. By the end, I was put off.
Same. So put off. Not look, and just to be very clear, we don't advocate for.
No, this is purely hypothetical.
This is hypothetical. You know, please observe your local laws, but and stay safe as well. But I felt the same. I was like, you know, I just don't find the idea of hurling my guts up to be, you know, at all appealing. So I think that was really interesting. I'd love to know what other people think about that. Mm. Like, if you saw this or if you've heard us talk about this or if you just heard about, you know, mentions of psychedelics in, you know, in general as being something that's, you know, useful for mental illness or if it's something that, you know, you just want to try because microdosing is another thing that's supposed to make you more creative and more effective at your job. You know, would you try that? But, you know, and in terms of the overall, aside from the completely putting me off, not that I was that keen anyway, but, you know, I feel like this was another one where they didn't really provide as much balance as I would like to see. I feel like they kind of like alluded to the fact that problems can happen. And actually this is where I feel like a narrator would have been really useful. So for example, when we actually see the woman like stop breathing during the ayahuasca ceremony at the American church, I feel like that would be the time when a narrator would jump in and be like, this is serious. This woman has stopped breathing. The church members aren't doing anything. Mm-hmm. It just kind of, if you're not paying attention to it, I feel like it could slip by as like, oh, she just didn't have a great time.
Yeah, no, you're so right.
Rather than, you know, right, mentioning it for the seriousness that it actually is. But, yeah, I think, again, they just didn't provide enough balance. There was not enough there's not enough mention from experts. You know, one thing that I really love, I really enjoy that they talked about the cultural appropriation, though. I think that was a really important thing. And it's something that, as we've just sort of alluded to, is not really spoken about enough in wellness circles.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely concur with all of that. I found the cultural appropriation narrative was fascinating. I'm so glad they included that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think this is a good example of where a narrator would have been really helpful because it was really scary to watch that woman and those experiences. And I wish they'd, you know, had someone to really actually illustrate the seriousness of that because it was just seemed like it was really, really downplayed.
Yeah, it was just glossed over.
Overall, in the scheme of these episodes, potentially one of the better ones overall, which is not a very high bar, let's be honest, but still.
No, it's not. Which means that we've actually only got one episode left to discuss. And I'm going to give you a spoiler alert. This one will make me mad as well.
Buzz, buzz.
So we're talking about bee stings and bee venom therapy next week. So don't forget to tune in for that. And of course, because it's our last episode of September, it's a five Tuesday month. It's a bonus episode. So please come and join us for that. But don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating, because that's how people will find us. Tell your mates, tell your mum, tell the person who's thinking about taking ayahuasca. If you have questions or comments, and really, we say this every week, but I really want to hear what people think about this. Like, I'm so intrigued. And particularly, you know, perhaps if you come from a First Nations people, tell us about what your experience is with cultural appropriation in wellness. I'd really like to hear that. So please get in contact with us on email, inbadtastepodcast@gmail.com. And of course, you can always come and see us on our socials. Pixie is at Pixie Nutrition and I am at Dr. Nikki Stamp. And of course, we will leave you references and relevant links in the show notes as always.
Wonderful. So yeah, join us next week for the final episode in the series, all about bee stings and how they apparently cure things that don't exist. It's going to be fun. We'll see you then. Bye. Go.
Woo.
Trippin' major ball sack. Wait, do you not get that reference?
No, what is that?
Oh my god, you need to watch 21 Jump Street.
How do we always wind up back with ball sacks?
Harsh but true.